You are listening to the IoT for All Media Network.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 200 of the IoT for All podcast, the number one publication and resource for IoT. I'm your host, Ryan Chacon. If you are watching this on YouTube, please like the video, subscribe to the channel. If you're listening to this podcast on a podcast directory somewhere, please subscribe so you get the latest episodes as soon as they become available. So today, a big deal. This is episode 200 of the IoT for All podcast. We have two fantastic guests. We have Eric Kahn, the CEO and co-founder of Leverage, and Caitlin McClellan, the COO of Leverage, here to talk about some very exciting stuff. Just to give you a quick overview of Leverage, if you are unfamiliar, they are a company that is focused on enabling and accelerating digital transformation for all organizations, amplifying human potential by providing software products and managed services that help them successfully develop and deploy IoT-enabled enterprise asset management solutions. They work with tons of companies all over the industry that are in around the globe even that trust Leverage to build innovative IoT-enabled asset management applications to optimize operations, increase revenue, and just kind of make everyone happy. So today's episode, very interesting. We like to do this every at least once a year, maybe twice a year, depending on how things are going. But this is the state of IoT. We are going to talk about the overview of the current state of the industry, headwinds and tailwinds that are influencing the industry, what the outlook looks like on the industry. We talk about kind of just the general challenges people face when it comes to IoT, why IoT is often perceived as a hard thing to do well, but we kind of debunk a lot of that. We talk about how to successfully build and sell IoT solutions. And then we also break down the five stages of the IoT solution journey from the Leverage point of view. They have an IoT playbook that they're putting out that is going to be free for everybody to download and digest. So it's very, very cool conversation. And then we wrap up by talking about where the industry is heading, general discussion kind of around that, and just the general opportunity that companies have in front of them if they are to consider adopting IoT and why they should really care. So all in all, very, very good conversation. I know this episode is a little bit longer than normal, but I promise you the value you're going to get out of listening to this is well worth the time. So please, please enjoy this episode, which I know you will. And without further ado, please enjoy this episode of the IoT for All podcast. Welcome, Eric and Caitlin, to the IoT for All podcast. Thanks for being here this week.
Hey, Ryan. Nice to be here.
Yeah. Nice to have you both. I'm very excited about this conversation. This is episode 200. So it's a very momentous occasion for the podcast. It's happened a lot faster than we thought. I know, Eric, you were here for episode 100. And that was something that then we started to increase to two per week and it got to 200 rather quickly. So it's great to have you back. And Caitlin, I know you were been on the podcast in the very early days, kind of as part of it. And now it's great to have you back here.
Yeah, it's great to see how far you've come personally with this podcast as well. I remember when you did your first episode and we're like, oh, I wonder if the audience is going to like this new format. You know, right. Something new. We're really focusing on written content. And now, yep. You know, the podcast, here's the 200th episode. You have a YouTube channel, getting into video, a lot more multimedia stuff. It's really cool to see not only how far IoT for All has come, but that the audience is really thirsty for this type of information and can consume it in multiple ways now.
Definitely.
Because as we will find out when we discuss this, IoT is complex, it's hard, and there's a lot of education needed for anyone to be successful in it.
Yeah, I think when we started IoT for All, we're very lucky to time it in a very in a good spot with relation to the IoT industry as a whole, being very technical at the time. This is about 6 years ago now. Very technical at the time. Most content was very dense, engineer type focused stuff. So we were able to kind of bring a different vantage point into that. We're talking more in layman terms, helping non-technical people understand and just generally contribute to the whole community and in helping adoption hopefully increase, which is a topic we'll talk about today. But yeah, it's been a really cool journey. And I'm very excited about kind of this conversation because I think the topic we want to talk about here is very relevant. And I think a lot of people find a lot of value out of it.
Yeah. So
first thing I want to do, for those of our audience who may not be as familiar with either of you, I'd love you if you both could kind of just quickly introduce yourself. Caitlin, I'll throw it over to you first. And then Eric, when you do an introduction, if you wouldn't mind then jumping into Leverage a bit and talking about what the company does and the role you all play in IoT.
Sure. So my name is Caitlin McClelland. I'm the COO of Leverage. Eric will share more about Leverage and what we do. But generally, I'm very interested in philosophy, technology, the intersection of the two. So day-to-day, actively building in IoT as part of Leverage, but it'll be fun to get to take a step back and look at the state of IoT as a whole. Where are things going? What does it all mean? So excited to talk about that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I'm Eric Kahn. I'm the CEO and co-founder of Leverage. Yep, I've been in this business now for 8 years. We started in 2014. We're coming up on our 8th year anniversary. Actually going to have, we switched to a remote first company in, right as the pandemic started. And it's been a great thing for us. And we're having our first all hands sort of company get together in a couple weeks, where we're going to meet a lot of the people we've never met before in person. We're flying in teams from all out of the country and across the country to meet it in our headquarters in DC. Very excited about that. What Leverage does is we're a software company first and foremost, but we also have a lot of systems engineering and experience in IoT to help enterprises primarily, whether directly for themselves or indirectly, if they want to build solutions and sell them to their customers. We help them on the software side of things with an enablement platform, or what we call the Leverage IoT stack, which is a collection of software that just makes IoT a little simpler, a little faster, a little more cost-effective on the software side. And then we enable hardware and connectivity to connect in, because ultimately IoT is about moving data from the physical world into the digital world, whether it's edge or cloud, and then making that data actionable and presenting it to end users so they can do something in their business primarily. We tend to focus primarily on enterprise, as I mentioned, don't do anything direct to consumer ourselves, but we have customers that do have products, that connected products that do interface directly with consumers. But we as a business are pretty much B2B or B2B2B.
Fantastic. And one thing that's usually good for audience to kind of bring, connect everything you mentioned about the company is if you could share any real life use cases and applications of the technology in the real world, solving a business problem that may be good to kind of showcase how things kind of work together.
Yeah, I'll give two quick examples that one of them should be anyone that's a boater out there. Your boat is an expensive asset that's in water, which can be very dangerous in terms of flooding or all kinds of other bad things happen around water. We have a company that was recently purchased by Yamaha called Siren Marine, longtime customer of ours, and they've essentially focused on the connected boat, and they've adopted our platform and technology stack to essentially created a device that ties into every subsystem on a boat, whether it be bilge, security, cameras, position, everything that you might want to know about your boat. You can basically get all that information in the palm of your hands on a native app. It works across the entire globe. So it has both cellular and satellite connectivity. So you can even take it out into the open ocean. You still have connectivity, but it essentially provides you real-time 24/7 access to the state of your boat, which is really, really valuable to pretty much everyone. So that's one example of a customer. That's kind of the consumer. They're selling to consumers, but we're selling to them as a business. Another example would be something like Manheim Auto Auctions. So this is more of an enterprise type of relationship. They also use via a subsidiary called Cox2M, which is part of Cox Communications. They standardized on our stack as well. And their problem that they wanted to solve was unique to auto auctions, where they have parking lots with thousands, if not tens of thousands of cars spread out over a very large area. And when they want to orchestrate an auction, they need to go grab, say, 2,000, 3,000 cars and get them into these various lanes in certain order. And that orchestration of all those vehicles is very, very difficult if you try to do it manually. You have hundreds of people running around on a lot trying to find specific vehicles based on VINs and other sort of information that's not easily discoverable from a distance. So we worked with them. They built the hardware, these very low cost and long battery life GPS trackers that would be placed inside the vehicles. And then they could use walking directions on a native app. They could use, on their desktop, they could see all of their cars, where they are they in the right line? And that's saving Manheim millions and millions of dollars a year Just being able to do that, because now their auctions run much more effectively on time, and the customers are happier, they're happier. And it's created new jobs actually as well that are higher order jobs instead of just people wandering around on the lots somewhat aimlessly looking for cars that have no license plates, and they're literally packed in very, very tightly. So that's a very, you know, it sounds like a relatively rudimentary problem to solve, but it has huge value to that customer.
Fantastic. Yeah, thanks for sharing kind of those use cases. It's always good to connect it all and show kind of how it's being used in the real world. So what I wanted to do is kind of transition into a topic that we try to do each 100 episodes or so, trying to talk about what's going on in the space, try to do it at least once a year. And this is perfectly timed, I think, with episode 200. And I want to talk about the state of IoT, the state of the Internet of Things industry a bit. And I wanted to pass it, or have Eric, if you could kind of kick us off and talk a little bit about what, like give us an overview of the current state of the market and kind of how you view it and kind of what you see happening that's important for our audience to really think about and understand just from a higher level.
Yeah, absolutely. I view IoT and digital transformation as very closely related. IoT, I kind of look at it as I call it the technological substrate of digital transformation. So it's really focused on the technologies that enable digital transformation, but digital transformation is the main theme. And what we've been seeing, it's a slow, inexorable type of thing, just like the internet was, right? There can be a lot of hype about it. There can be a lot of people that see the promise of it. But the reality is you're dealing with the physical world, coupling it with the digital world. It's very similar to what Mark Zuckerberg's trying to do with Meta now and the metaverse. So they're all very closely related. And as Isaac Newton once said, you know, we're all standing on the shoulder of giants. So what IoT is basically doing is standing on the shoulder of all the things, all the technology innovations, whether it be batteries, low-cost sensors, just sensing in general, cloud computing, edge computing, AI, ML. It basically takes all of that, brings it all together to create a solution that is end-to-end, has hardware, connectivity, software, and then ultimately value in data that can be presented to multiple constituents. It could be individual consumers, as in the boating application. I can see what's happening with my boat. Or it could be, you know, a service center that's maybe just tracking some service on behalf of a customer, and they want to make it more efficient operationally. So there's a lot of different use cases. But ultimately, you're tying it all together. And so, you know, IoT, you know, some people wonder, you know, is it all hype? Is it really just a buzzword that will go away? We firmly believe that is not true. Like a lot of things that are kind of groundbreaking, they take time. There's a lot of pieces to it beyond the technology that are really, really vital to making a use case or an application successful in any market. So in addition to the technology just working reliably, you also have to have discipline around the financial aspects of it. What is the value you're providing? So you can do technology, but just doing it for technology's sake is not going to make a product. It has to provide value that a customer is willing to pay for. So the cost relative to value, there must be a delta there, or otherwise it won't scale. You can do pilots and, you know, test things out. But you know, this digital transformation is ongoing. It's not going to stop, just like it hasn't stopped for anything else. And IoT is just another sort of roll up of a whole bunch of technologies that are enabling new things to be done. You know, you can look back and say, you know, look at Amazon today versus Amazon 20 years ago. Look at Netflix today versus Netflix 20 years ago. Totally different companies, totally different markets, different consumers' experiences, but yet they transformed entire industries. And that's exactly what IoT does. It will transform industries. It'll transform the way consumers view products and services, but it is difficult. It does require discipline to get there. And there'll be a lot of, you know, failures along the way, just like in anything that's new. Every invention, the Wright brothers didn't just design the perfect aircraft and fly it the first time, right? There was many, many times. That's the way science kind of works. And IoT is exactly the same way. So we're very bullish on IoT. We as a company have been growing nonstop since we started. And we see that across the industry, but it is something that you can't take lightly.
Let me ask you. Go ahead, Gail. I'm sorry.
Yeah, if I can just add something regarding kind of the size of the opportunity that we see in front of us, and Eric touched on a lot of this, but a question you might ask is like, all right, how big is the market for IoT? You know, what is the size of this opportunity? And one way that I think about it is IoT is about bringing the physical world online. So we started with all the people on the planet. There's now, I think, 6.5 billion people who have smartphones, which is crazy. There's like 7.5 billion. That's only a billion people who don't have smartphones. Many of them might be children. And so back in the 1940s, Thomas Watson, who was president of IBM at the time, had said something like, yeah, I only see a market for 5 computers in the world, which is funny to hear that today, knowing that there are 6.5 billion computers in people's pockets. But at the time, was that so crazy to think when they were room-sized computers that cost, you know, millions of dollars and were really hard to use and not that powerful? No. But what was not seen is this progress of, as things get easier to use, smaller, cheaper, you can open up all the use cases. And so what we've done over the past, you know, especially the past like 3 decades, is essentially brought every human online. We've connected every human to the digital world that we've built. The next wave is connecting all the things, because humans matter most. We care most about people in our lives. Sure. But there's a lot of things that are important too, whether it's your boat or for enterprises, the assets that they have. And so that's what IoT is about. Now, where is the physical limit of that? Is it literally everything we're going to connect? I'm not sure, but we're just in the early stages of this wave that is inexorable. It's going to happen. There's a lot of challenges. They're being figured out. And so as Eric said, we're really bullish on IoT and its opportunity for businesses that are building solutions to sell themselves as opportunities, sure, but also companies that are adopting it, because digital transformation is a transformation, and it can fundamentally transform the capabilities of businesses and how they do their work, how they deliver to their customers, how they become more efficient as an organization.
That's fantastic. I like that breakdown. Eric, I wanted to ask you as a follow-up to kind of what you were saying earlier, are there any current kind of market conditions? I mean, we just came out of COVID, inflation is a hot topic, supply chain is a hot topic. How are all of these different market conditions influencing the IoT industry? And, or at least how should our audience be thinking about how they play a role, whether they're, you know, positive things that are influencing the market or negative things that are influencing the market? How do you kind of see that playing a role in the current state of the market right now?
Yeah, absolutely. When we look at it at a macro level, we see greater tailwinds than headwinds overall, net, but there are definitely headwinds as well as tailwinds affecting the industry. And some of them are relatively unique. So one of the things that we all went through, you know, for the first time, unless you're 100 years old, is a pandemic, right? And that had some very interesting implications psychologically and with the way work is done across the world. In March of 2020, we're like, you know, we're like most companies at that time. We had offices, everyone came into the office. That's how work was done. All of a sudden, everyone needed to work from home, safety first. You know, we weren't sure about how the virus was even communicated between people. And so everything became remote. Well, what that exposed is, if you're going to be remote, you can't operate, as I like to say, you can't go to the data. You have to bring the data to you. Mm-hmm. So this whole concept of physical remoteness got into everyone's minds of how important it is to be able to operate anything, including your business or your personal life, remotely. How do you do that? Well, you need new tools, you need connectivity, you need devices, you need all of this infrastructure to be able to do that effectively. That same thought process is translated into business thinking as well. And this is the huge tailwind I think the IoT or digital transformation industry in general is experiencing, is everyone is now realizing, hey, I actually can do this. One, you can actually be remote and operate a business. And consumers are expecting to be able to have touchless experiences and have things pushed to them, whether it's if you're taking your car in for a service, you don't want to have to just show up, not know if you have an appointment, not know how long you'll be there. You want to be able to have an Uber-like experience for everything so you can plot your life separately from whatever the service is. So this whole tying together and the mental model breakdown, which COVID forced of we can't do things the way we used to, has really gotten people to think about how do we transform so that we can be more efficient, can do things remotely. And then you layer on recently, you know, coming out of COVID. So that thought process is already there. You have many, many companies are just switching to remote first, just like we did, and finding out, hey, in some cases, it actually works better. There are certain instances where being in person matter and are more efficient or just socially better. But generally, you can do quite well, especially as a software company like us, working remotely. You have access to global talent. You have access to 24-hour time zones now because you can have people everywhere. So there's a built-in efficiency there. You need to manage it, of course. It's different. But that type of efficiency, and coupled with a lot of sort of traditional brick-and-mortar companies or physical operations companies, they saw during the stock market run-up after the pandemic or while the pandemic was underway, all the big tech companies, their stock didn't go down. It went way up. And why was that? Because they were the beneficiaries of remote posture, right? They had automated so many things that they were able to actually do them safely and more efficiently, and they got larger market share. So the combination of the mental model saying that, hey, we can do things remotely all the way at the executive level of every large company in the world, in concert with, hey, these technology companies are actually set up really well to survive in this remote world and thrive, has made everyone sort of at the executive level, decision maker level, say, wow, we really need to do this. This is not something that's a nice to have. It's a must have if we want to compete, if we want to put our workers in safe conditions. For all many, many reasons, this is something that you have to do. Now, those are the huge tailwinds, and I think they will predominate over the time. But in the short term, pandemic also caused the headwinds, which is, you know, as everyone's probably read, supply chain, that's leading to inflation. But I believe that those things are relatively transitory in nature compared to the longer tailwinds. So we're already starting to see through our partners, because we're not a hardware company, so we haven't had directly any supply chain issues for our company, but our partners who make hardware and build things in the real world, they've certainly seen pricing increases, lack of availability, but that's already starting to ease. We're already seeing that happening, early signs of inventory levels coming back, things like that. So we think by 2023, a lot of that noise and some of those inflationary pressures will have relaxed, and now those tailwinds will predominate.
Absolutely. Yeah, we've through a lot of the conversations I've had on here, there's been a lot of optimism coming out of COVID, even with the talks of inflation, talks about supply chain issues, with just a growing need for companies to better prepare themselves for other situations that may come up in the future, like another pandemic, whether that's shifting in use case priority within organizations or just realizing that the value IoT provides, where it's something that helps improve efficiencies, helps you save money, potentially even make money through new business business lines and revenue kind of product offerings that you can create with this, has really driven demand for a lot of these organizations who maybe IoT might have been further down on their list, but that the pandemic kind of actually forced them to think a little bit differently about things. And it's been really interesting to kind of see that growth.
Yeah. If I can add some other tailwinds as well, you know, the things Eric described, a lot of those things have been happening over, especially over the past few years of the pandemic, but there's also larger tailwinds that have been playing out over the last decade or two decades now. And a lot of that's related to, you know, cost of components, sensors, all the things that make up an IoT solution. So if you generically think of an IoT solution as having four layers to it, the devices, you know, the things that are actually out in the world collecting data, sensing things, or perhaps performing actions, some way in which they're communicating, typically wirelessly. So the wireless network would be that second layer. third layer, there's the infrastructure layer, the compute layer. So actually ingesting that data, storing it, often in the cloud, it could be on-prem. And then finally, the application layer, which is how are you actually making this useful to people in their day-to-day, if they're part of the organization. And every one of these layers, there are innovations that are happening that are bringing down the costs and making all these things easier to use. So at the device level, battery and sensor technology has been a big beneficiary, especially of the smartphone revolution mm-hmm. over the past decade and a half. So bringing down the costs, increasing the availability of components that can feed into the devices, public and private wireless network rollouts. There's a lot of options. And so those just continue to be ongoing. Lower compute and storage costs, especially as cloud is a big part of digital transformation. And that's still, it's a massive industry already, but still in the early stages. That's bringing down costs. And then we like to think for leverage, having really good application development platforms, which is what we do, is also enabling the overall costs to come down while the ease of use goes up. And this ties into what I was saying before with, looking at mainframe computers, now 80 years ago.
Right.
The reason there weren't that many is because they were really expensive, really hard to use, really big. And what we're seeing in IT is that things are getting less expensive, smaller, and easier to use. And that's just increasing adoption. So that's another just big tailwind that's been playing out over the past few decades now.
And Kayla, let me ask you, since through each of those kind of periods of time and new technology and advances in technology, there's always these challenges that that companies have to overcome in order, and or the industry has to overcome in order to see adoption really take off. Can you talk about some of the challenges that you all see the market really facing, especially when it comes to the adoption? Obviously, adoption takes time. There's a lot of moving pieces. There's some view parts of it as more complex than others. Different companies you have to work with. Not everybody does everything to bring an IoT solution to market. So, at the end of the day, IoT is not the easiest thing to implement. So can you talk about, just from your perspective, how what are the biggest challenges in the space, and kind of how do companies can think about overcoming them, and maybe even showcase why some of these challenges are maybe not as big of challenges as they used to be?
Yeah. Yeah, I'll look at this through two lenses. So one's kind of zooming out macro, what are some of the larger challenges? And then I'll focus in on, if you're a company that is trying to build IoT solutions, what are some of the challenges there? Mm-hmm. So kind of at the macro level, education is a big part of it, of what is this thing that we're talking about? And that's a big reason that IoT for All was founded in the first place, which is to help with this education of what is this thing we're actually talking about? I mean, IoT is, I find it both a very helpful term and sometimes a term that can be counterproductive. And what I mean by that is that it's helpful in the sense that it captures this huge wave that's happening, which is Internet of Things. We're bringing things online. Like I was saying before, we've brought basically all the people online. Now we're bringing all the things online in the world that we care about.
Yep.
And so it's very helpful as a term to capture that general trend. Where it can become counterproductive is that there are many different flavors of IoT within this broad umbrella that are actually quite different, because they might have very different technologies required to enable them. They might be solving very different problems. And they're all classified as IoT. And yet, as an organization thinking, do I want to do IoT? What does that mean? What are the real use cases here? So I think generally that is has been improving immensely as collectively the industry, the ecosystems are figuring out where are these pockets, where are the boundaries between them? How do you better articulate the value proposition combined with some of these tailwinds that Eric mentioned, where there's a more recognized need for digital transformation, for the ability to perform operations remotely, to bring physical operations online? So I think a lot of that is being solved with organizations like IoT for All, helping to educate the market itself, just getting better at articulating what are the value propositions, what are we actually doing here, and a growing recognition of how important this is for all businesses as they plan for their future. So that's kind of a macro thing that's been a challenge, but is being solved. Looking more focused on organizations that are adopting IoT or building IoT solutions. Eric touched on this earlier, something we think about is, I think about this Venn diagram. If you imagine these three circles of the operational considerations, the technical considerations, and then the financial considerations, you need to find the bullseye in the middle of all three of those, the intersection of all three of these circles of this Venn diagram that I'm imagining. Mm-hmm. And The challenge is that each of those pulls in different directions. And so how do you make the appropriate trade-offs? So what do I mean when I say technical, operational, financial? Technical is the features and capabilities of the overall IoT solution. What are you sensing? You know, what kind of data are you collecting? Are you collecting location data? If so, how? Are you using GPS? Are you doing indoor location? Are you collecting temperature data? What data are you collecting? How frequently are you collecting it? How is this being presented to users? What kinds of operations might you be performing on that data? All of these are the technical requirements of the solution. The financial considerations are, how expensive is this? So how expensive is it to develop upfront? Because if you're developing a new IoT solution, you need to identify the right devices, the right network. Rarely does a company do all of them. So you're going to work with partners or vendors to provide some of these components.
Right.
But how costly is it to stitch all these together up front? And then, crucially, how important is this to deliver on an ongoing basis? Because there are ongoing costs. There's the cost of the devices, of course, but there also might be a cellular subscription you're paying to the network to be able to wirelessly communicate. A cloud bill to run your infrastructure on an ongoing basis. All of these things are costs that are ongoing costs you need to support. And if it's too expensive, then customers aren't going to be willing to pay, or you're not going to make money. One of the two. Mm-hmm. So, you really need to consider the financial considerations so that it's at a price point customers are willing to pay for. It gives them enough value that it's worth it for the money, while being inexpensive enough that you can make some margin, some profit on it. Because if either of those things isn't true, customers aren't willing to pay, or you can't, or you're losing money, it's not going to be viable.
Right.
The third circle, this third bucket, is the operational considerations. And this can be heavily tied to the financial. All of these things are interdependent. But what I mean by operational is we're dealing with the physical world here. So we actually need to deploy these devices into the field. Again, digital transformation is a great term because transformation captures what is happening to these organizations. You have to transform. And it's not just a click of a button adoption. There are changes to workflows, changes to how employees operate. And so how do you install the IoT solution in the first place in a way that's not a huge headache or costly? And this is how it feeds into financial considerations. But also, how do you provide care and feeding? You can think of an IoT system as a living, breathing thing. Living, breathing things, they need food, they need water, they need air to survive. And so once you get it out in the field, let's say you're using battery-powered trackers, like the Mannheim use case that Eric mentioned for the vehicles. At some point, the battery's going to die. If you have thousands of vehicles and you have to replace those batteries every month, I mean, imagine if you had to recharge them every day like your smartphone. Like, just the sheer operational impact of that would make it not worth it.
Right.
So these things, they need to last years. But even when they last years, at some point, you're going to need to replace those batteries. How do you do that? How do you do that in a way that, one, you replace it before it dies, because it could die and then get moved, and then how do you find it?
Right.
So you want to do that beforehand. Who's doing it? How are you doing it? If you need to recharge 1,000 devices, you can't just plug it into an outlet. You need like 1,000 outlets. So there's just a lot of operational considerations that go into this. And all of these things pull in different directions. There's things you can do from a technical perspective, the technical considerations that say, oh, this is better. We're actually sending more frequent updates. That's better for the user. They get more insight into the position, because we're getting position every second. But actually, that actually just jacked up your costs for the solution, because there's more compute costs and storage costs for more data. So is it worth it? Does it need to be every second? It can be every 15 seconds. And this is where this interconnectedness of these three buckets gets tricky, of how do you make the trade-offs across the financial considerations, the technical considerations, the operational considerations.
Right.
And so I think that's one of the big challenges, is that for organizations getting into this the first time, sometimes they just don't know about what some of those trade-offs are until it's too late. They get a year in, 6 months in, and go, oh my gosh, like, we made this technical decision way back, and now it's having this operational impact. Because for a pilot, for 1,000 devices, there's very different considerations than a full-scale rollout for 1,000,000 devices for some of the operational and financial challenges. And so how do you do those things? I mean, as an organization, in addition to providing a technology that we believe is some of the best in the industry for the application development, we also work really closely with our customers, because we've seen all this before as an organization. As Eric mentioned, we've been doing this 8 years. We've learned a lot of it the hard way, unfortunately, having made some of the mistakes ourselves. But being able to see down the road so that you can make the right decisions today to not screw yourself over in the future is really important. And something that companies new to IoT, they just don't know. So some of this can be solved with technology. If the costs are just fundamentally lower, then the financial considerations become easier. If things are easier to use or play more nicely together, then you might have to make less trade-offs. Some of the tools we're providing are meant specifically at smoothing over those operational challenges at scale, because we've gone to scale. We know what it takes.
Right.
So I'd say those are some of the challenges. And later in this conversation, I think we can get into how we recommend companies approach IoT in a 5-stage journey that can help mitigate some of these challenges of and surface some of the trade-offs or considerations you need to make across these three categories: operational, technical, and financial.
Absolutely. Yeah. Now that was probably one of the best challenges breakdowns I've ever had on the podcast. So I asked a question a lot about different challenges companies are seeing, and that was very thorough and actually really approached it from a unique angle that most companies at least have not shared kind of that level of thinking around all the different pieces that have to play together in order to be successful, which kind of ties into a question I wanted to ask Eric is when we're thinking about that next step of a current company to actually adopt, for a company like Leverage, how do you go about kind of working with that organization to successfully build and then sell the IoT solution? And can kind of talk, I guess one thing that'd be good, I know this is 200 episodes in, people should know this by now, but can you also just define at a high level what it means when we say IoT solution? Like it's there's so many different pieces to it. Some people may be a little disconnected on what an actual solution is and the value it creates, but then really diving into kind of how to successfully build and sell those solutions.
Yeah, Caleb touched on this before. Before I get into it, you would expect a philosopher like Caleb to give a very detailed and well thought through description of the challenges, and that's why Caleb's an instrumental person in the company. He thinks very deeply about this stuff. And IoT does require some deep thought. And what we've really been doing, and we'll talk about it towards the end, but Caleb's been working on something we call the IoT playbook. It's blossomed into a greater than 100 slide deck with lots of copious notes to help customers. You know, we're basically just giving this away for free. Again, trying to educate customers up front, because the last thing we want is an unhappy customer, a customer that, even though we're selling the software and enabling the application development, and we're doing it, we believe we do a great job at that, if the solution itself doesn't work for them, we still feel like we failed for the customer. So we want to make sure that their eyes are wide open going into it, what it really takes. And so this IoT playbook, which gets into just basically our deep experience outside of our software, just what does it mean to do this? And what should a customer expect, whether you're building it for your own internal organization and your own customers directly, or you're building solutions, a suite of applications that you want to sell through your current channels, like a telecom or some other type of customer that we have. So we'll provide a link at the end of this. I think it would be great for anyone who's getting into IoT or thinking about it to just flip through it and kind of see where all the potholes are in the journey, and at least be educated before you go into it, so you know which questions to ask, whether you're working with Leverage or any other vendor for that matter, and where to start, and what are the important decisions you need to make early on. So in terms of how we view an IoT solution, so you know, from a technology standpoint, we view it as a 4-layer kind of cake, if you will. The devices, the sensors that are out in the real world, sensing things of all different types, humidity, acceleration, location. There's a million different technologies there. Then you have to get that data from that far edge to some sort of compute location. That's typically wireless communications, right? That's where everything's done. There are numerous ways, public networks such as cellular networks, private cellular networks, that have sort of recently blossomed in the CBRS on Go community. You have private networks that are non-cellular like LoRa. You know, we had Sigfox. You have satellite communications. You have different architectures where you have hub and spoke. You have direct connectivity, you know, through gateways. You have all different types of architectures of how the data gets from the far edge all the way up to the cloud. But ultimately, That's a lot of different wireless. There's Zigbee, there's Bluetooth, there's just a dozens and dozens of different protocols that get data, and they all have their pluses and minuses. And then the third layer is what we call the infrastructure or compute layer, right? It's compute storage, it's unlimited power, unlimited ability to store and crunch numbers. That's typically cloud, but edge has now become a very important part of that. And things like Kubernetes and containers and microservices are enabling cloud and edge to work sort of seamlessly together now, where you can put a server within a store or within a location, have it do time critical types of data processing and decisioning, but also communicate back to a much larger compute farm in the cloud. So that's the third layer, and that would be the hyperscalers like Google or Amazon or Microsoft, and you know, those classes of companies that do that. And then finally, the thing that's closest to the end user is what we call the application layer, and that's where we live, that's where our products live, and that's really all software. It's presented via hardware devices like your phone or your laptop or your tablet, but ultimately it's software running typically in the cloud, talking to edge and far edge sensors, collecting all the data, making sense of it, organizing it, and helping people make decisions or make decisions for them based on rules that they set up. That's where we work. So those four layers: application, infrastructure, connectivity, and ultimately devices and sensors all the way out. That's how we view an IoT solution. And to your second question of how do we approach that sort of layer cake,
right?
What we've learned in terms of a business approach to enable customers to be successful across this whole domain of technologies and the three legs of the stool Callum described, which is the financial, operational, and technical considerations. We've kind of, you know, we've achieved product market fit at this point, and so we know kind of what the journey looks like for most customers. And we've now designed our company and our business around these three stages that a customer kind of goes through. The first stage is the proof of concept, the pilot. In the old days, the old days being 4 years ago, people were customers, the early adopters, they were just wanted to see, could the technology work? Customers are much, much more informed now. They also not only want to see how it works technically, like can it do the job, provide the feature or the insight they're looking for, but what is the cost? What is the plan for scale? So they're getting smarter on that. And that's actually a great thing, because you want to think about that. Otherwise, you have, you know, what's an industry norm of 75% of all IoT projects fail. That is really at the pilot stage, because you try to go from pilot to rolling it out, as Callum said, from 1,000 sensors to 1,000,000 sensors, completely different ballgame when you try to do that. So it is going to fail, because you will not understand how to update the devices, know when they're offline, know where they even are, that kind of thing. So we have three phases that we've have product and services that help our customers move from each phase. And you can't really go from the first phase all the way to the third phase without going through some middle phase. So our first phase is, we call it a showcase or a jumpstart. It's just a productized service, a pilot, a proof of concept in a single location with a small number of devices, just proving that it can work, but also proving the financial and operational considerations have been thought through and modeling out what this may look like at scale. Second phase is, the customer goes, great, it looks like it checks a box on the technology works, the operational and financial based back of envelope calculations looks good, looks like it'll add the value delta that I mentioned earlier. We can see what it's going to provide. Now I want to integrate it into my business. That's where a lot of the customization pieces come in, because every business is unique. They have different processes. They have different software systems that are running them. They have just different management styles. Everything is very different, right? They have different concerns legally, that they, you know, privacy, all of this stuff has to be worked out. And there has to be some integration of our product or any product into their business. You know, there's basically change management they have to prepare for, to message to all their employees and maybe hire new people to manage this thing ultimately when it scales. So there's that phase of it, which is kind of an integration, very, very kind of hand-holding with the customer. And we do portions of that to help them, but we also have partners that help with that, consulting companies, you know, third-party system integrating companies that can help do some of this integration. And they, usually the business themselves has some internal resources to help. Then the final phase is where you get to the scale, right? That's where the true value is actually received by the customer. And that's where our platform really shines, because we've built it, as Caleb said, we've been there, we've been to scale, we know what it means, we know all the things that have to be done to not only deploy in the first place, but then manage it and reduce and keep costs low. So the last thing you want to do is, you know, they call it in the industry bricking a device. What that means is you've deployed a device and it doesn't, it no longer works. It has to be physically retrieved and touched. That's the worst of all worlds, especially at scale, because you don't want to have to go find a million devices, or if you're Manheim, 50,000 devices, even on a single auction lot. That's a lot of walking around. That's a lot of cost, and you have to replace them all. So we focus on making sure that the operation, once it does get to scale, hums along. You can manage the devices, and you can realize the benefits of all the data. So that's the three phases that we've seen, and all our customers kind of go through them. Sometimes they go through faster than others. Some take longer. It depends on the size of the organization and what they're really trying to do.
Yeah, it's fantastic. One thing I wanted to ask if you guys could expand on, and maybe I can throw it over to Caleb to talk about this, is when we talk about it from the customer perspective, there is this IoT journey that customers go on, right? From when they educate themselves and understand what the technology is, all the way through when they begin launching, and then eventually hopefully get to scale. Caleb, from your experience working with different deployments and projects, what does that journey look like for customers? And you can tie that in obviously to what Eric was talking about of what the solution journey is like as well. But I know they kind of tie hand in hand a little bit there with going from the ideation phase all the way to scale. But if you could talk and break that down a little bit, I think that'd be great.
Sure. Yeah, and this is a core part of the IoT playbook that we're going to be sharing freely for people to access, because we want to make this knowledge accessible. It really is important to think through this in a structured approach. So we think of there being five steps to the IoT solution journey that we call it. And those steps are select a use case, validate, typically with a proof of concept or an MVP. Validate, is there something actually here before we invest further? Pilot it. You know, actually get in the real world with real sensors and start finding out what are some of those considerations you can't plan for.
Right.
Launch it, you know, going from a pilot to a larger deployment typically requires some, you know, there might be some additional things you need to change or features to add or things like that, that you learn during the pilot as part of launching. And then finally scale, you know, how do you operate this thing at scale with hundreds of thousands, millions of devices? Hopefully, you know, if you're selling this, tons of customers, bringing you revenue, how do you do that? And so you might wonder, all right, that's five steps. Why did Eric just describe three when it's the leverage view? And that's because our business, from a technology perspective, you know, we have aligned it around these steps to enable each one to be successful. So, for example, with going from pilot to launch, you don't want to have to rebuild everything. And we've seen this with some other companies on the market where they are really good at doing the proof of concept or the pilot, but then there's this huge gap between going to scale. And the way we've architected things is it's the exact same software, you know, it's aimed at being able to do each of these well. So really quickly able to build an MVP so you can validate the use case, and on that same software stack, being able to go to scale. You don't need to say, all right, we proved it. Now we need to rebuild everything or find a different software platform. But the reason it's not, you know, Eric described three and I just described five is, you know, for this first step, selecting a use case from a technology perspective, we can't choose the use case for you. What we can do is help with how to think about selecting a use case. Mm. And this is where the IoT playbook comes in. So a lot of this is aimed at companies that are saying, all right, we want to build an IoT solution. You know, whether that is an entrepreneur within a larger enterprise that is trying to build a new business line, or a startup, an entrepreneur that is building a company around a product or something they see in the market. In both cases, though, you need to decide, what are we tackling here? What is the problem we're trying to solve? And that's really dependent on the company. So for the larger companies selecting a use case, you should look at, what is your existing customer base? You know, if you're a very large enterprise, you know, we work with a lot of telecoms in the world. They already have relationships with many different businesses. And so that's a big strength of theirs that they should leverage. So, okay, right. Well, we already have a ton of customers in manufacturing. What problems did they have that we might be able to go solve? Because you already have the distribution, you already have the relationship. So all you need to focus on is building the right solution that'll solve their needs and they'll be willing to pay for. On the entrepreneurship side, I mean, we have both customers at both ends of the spectrum. Eric mentioned earlier, Siren Marine, they're a startup built on top of our stack. We have some other startups as well. And for them, typically what they're bringing is very deep industry specific experience. It could be in boating, it could be in the medical space. And they see a problem that they're like, hey, there's a product here. There's a company here that can be built around this. Right. So in general, this first step, select your use case. Things to think about are, what are the real problems here? How much would customers be willing to pay? One way you can work back from that is if you're saving them costs, then presumably they'd be willing to pay at least that much. So if you can save a company $1 million, it should be worth somewhere around maybe a little less than $1 million, because then there's a delta right. of how much you're right. saving them. That could be one way to think about it. But fundamentally, you want to identify, where can I provide real value, and where is an area in which we uniquely as a business have an opportunity here, whether because we have existing relationships or we uniquely see a problem because of our industry knowledge in this area. So that's step one. Again, the IoT playbook helps with how to think about this.
Sure.
But from a technical perspective, no matter how good we make our application development software, we can't choose your use case for you. Once you've selected a use case, however, what we can help you with is the second stage, which is validate. So the reason we have, if I can just pause for a second and zoom out, the reason we advocate for this journey with these distinct steps is to solve some of those challenges I mentioned before. So if you're trying to make these trade-offs between the technical considerations, the operational considerations, the financial considerations, but they're all interconnected, how do you plan that in advance? Well, the answer is you can't. You can't know this in advance. You can make guesses, and you should certainly do some back of the envelope calculations and have a general idea that there's something here. But a lot of this you only find out once you actually put it in the real world. You know, what are some of the operational considerations? Well, how do you find that out if some of those operations are your customer? You don't have full visibility into that until you actually start working with them and deploying and find out, oh, wow, right. here's a challenge we could not have planned for. So this can be really scary, especially for larger companies, because they, you know, they don't want to waste money on just throw a bunch of good money after bad. And so they want to plan. They want to say, okay, well, if we're going to invest in this thing, we want to make sure that there's a return on investment for us, which is completely reasonable for them to think that. The challenge is you can't know some of that in advance. So how do you square the circle here? How do you find a solution to minimize risk so that you don't throw a bunch of money at something only to find out it doesn't work, while also recognizing the reality that some of the stuff you can't find out that by taking these steps. So the design of this journey is meant to enable companies to get maximum learnings for the lowest investment and risk, which ultimately de-risks it. So the validate stage, I zoomed out, I'm zooming back in. You select a use case, you think, all right, there's something here. The validate stage, you want to really quickly build an MVP or a proof of concept. Our stack, once again, is aimed at helping with exactly this, where there's a lot of no-code configuration abilities to very quickly build an application. You can even use simulated data, so you don't have to integrate devices yet. So you can actually put it in front of potential customers and say, what do you think of this thing? This can enable you to validate the use case before you invest in, you know, going out and buying devices and integrating them, running a pilot, which has expenses for it. So you're getting a lot of learnings for minimal investment by validating the use case with a proof of concept or MVP. You know, you can use either term. The third step, pilot. So at this stage, you say, okay, we validated it. We got some good customer input. They're really excited. They said, this looks great. And now we need to figure out, all right, what are some of the real costs operationally, financially? What are the right devices for this thing? This is where a pilot comes in. If you are the one building and selling solutions, ideally you want your customer to pay for the pilot if you're selling into an enterprise, because then they have some skin in the game. If you just do it for free, you know, they might say, oh, this looks cool, but then it just dies and doesn't go anywhere. So ideally you get them to have, you know, some payment for it. Now they'll be more invested, literally, in the solution. But you actually want to deploy it in the real world, because this is where you can generate some of those learnings of what are the true costs? What are the true trade-offs? You might choose a device that you use in the pilot, and you might prove there's value and the customer says, I'm willing to pay for this. But as you go through the pilot, you realize this isn't the right device. for whatever reason. We actually need a different way of getting location or connectivity for the device, or sure. Or there's some operational considerations that come up that you just need to address. So once again, the goal of this pilot in this third step is maximum learnings, minimal investment to de-risk it. So now you finish the pilot. The customer says, this is amazing. We want to take this to scale. There's a real business case here. And you've made a lot of, you've gained a lot of learnings. Now you can evaluate, is it worth launching this? And sometimes it might not. You should feel comfortable as an organization deciding this isn't worth it. You know, we've gone through this and this is actually is much more expensive or operationally intensive than we imagined at first. Cut it. That's the point of taking these steps. So you don't waste a bunch of money. You can pursue the real opportunities. But let's say that there's a there's a real opportunity. Now it's time to launch. This is where you'll typically start ramping up a lot of your internal teams. You can keep your teams pretty lean going through these phases, especially because, once again, our leverage IT stack helps with reducing a lot of the costs and speeding up this development.
Right.
But if you're launching this, you need to have operational teams, sales, marketing, if you're really taking this to market. So that's where you might start actively hiring up to support this, building some additional features you might notice. Perhaps for this one customer you piloted, they're happy, but you want to sell this to multiple customers. And so right. you might need to build some features that are make this more generically or generally appealing to more companies so you can have a true product. So there's some additional development needed. Maybe you need to choose different devices because you learned in the pilot you didn't have the right ones. But fundamentally, what you're doing is gearing up to really launch this thing.
Right.
That's step four, launch. And then step five is scale. So this is where you're figured it out. You have the right solution and you're just adding new customers and supporting them. And there's still a lot involved there. You know, how do you sell new customers? The contracting, how do you deploy to them? How do you collect money so you can actually make money on this IoT solution? And then how do you support it operationally so that 3 years, 5 years down the road, as these devices, maybe the batteries die, how do they get replaced? Who is doing the replacement?
Right.
Figuring out all those elements are part of scaling and managing the IoT solution. So once again, five steps as part of this IoT solution journey. There's select your use case, validate the use case, pilot it, launch it, and then scale. And by taking this approach, it enables you to have maximum learnings for minimal investment, which ultimately de-risks it. So you can make this trade-off between the recognition that you can't plan everything in advance and you don't want to just throw money at something without an expectation that, hey, you know, we can make a return on our investment here.
Right. Fantastic. All right, that was great. The playbook sounds like something I think our audience is going to get a ton of value out of. So I'm excited to hear a little bit more in a second about kind of when that's coming out, when they'll be able to kind of access it, that kind of thing. But I did want to kind of wrap us up by talking about the industry again that we kind of started the conversation with. I wanted to finish with talking about where we think the industry is headed and what opportunities companies have in front of them if they are to adopt IoT and really why they should care about that. So Eric, maybe you can kind of answer that in any way you think is appropriate, just talking about where you think the industry is going and why companies should be really thinking about and considering IoT. And then Kalen, feel free to kind of jump in from there.
Yeah, I think our theme here is, you know, Kalen and I and our entire company are very bullish long-term on IoT. It's a trend that's not going to change. It's not hype. The term that's maybe bandied about may change over time, but ultimately it's something that is happening and will continue to happen and will affect every one of us, just like our smartphones have affected our lives in major ways now, right?
Right.
So ultimately this wave is continuing to move towards the shore and it's going to happen. I think what we're seeing, and you know, Kalen brought up a really important point, that the cost aspect of IoT is so important to the viability of any solution. And what we're seeing because of declining cost, again, inflation, sort of transitory inflation aside, the cost of these solutions overall is becoming cheaper and cheaper, which unlocks solutions that people have been thinking about forever, but they just couldn't make either the technology or fundamentally the cost work to make it viable from a business or from a consumer adoption standpoint. Those trends will continue to come down. I mean, innovations in batteries that will make your EV drive 1,000 miles on a single charge. That's going to change the world, right? Just that alone. Well, right. That same technology is going to be applied to inexpensive sensors at the edge, where now you don't have to change the battery. Maybe you never have to change the battery. There's battery innovations. Again, this is not specific to IoT. This is a little piece of it, but it's an important piece. Batteries are a big piece of it, of IoT solution maintenance over time. So if you solve the battery problems in one industry, that will ripple into ours and have incredibly positive effects and unlock use cases. Similarly, cloud, all these things we've mentioned, they're all declining. And so what we're seeing is use cases that people have been talking about or are discovering are now actually that delta between cost and value is wide enough that it makes sense to do them. So, mm-hmm. you know, the car tracking that I mentioned, you know, on lot management for Mannheim, that now makes sense from a cost standpoint. It's viable. It actually not only saves them money, it provides a better experience, it provides so much, and it provides data-centric decisioning. So that's also really important. So that opens up new revenue streams. If you're collecting data on all these different vehicles and you have 10 million vehicles going through your lots every year, if you're collecting data on that at scale, there's always some value in that data, you know, to resell it, repackage it, or for internal use or external use. So, So data, you know, is the new oil, as they say, the IoT generates tons of data. So therefore there's lots of revenue there. So we see use cases across the board. Where we have seen the biggest growth for our company has been essentially in what I'll call generically transportation and logistics. The reason that is probably our top vertical, and that's a very big vertical, and, you know, supply chain, all those related things, is because when you're tracking something that's $1,000 or more with a device that's $10 or less, that makes a lot of sense, right? But if you can't put a $100 device on a $100 item and track it, that makes no sense economically, right? So you have to have that huge, you know, 2x, 3x delta. And if you're doing cars, boats, trucks, RVs, trailers, any of these are all expensive assets. People that own them or businesses that own them care very much about what state they're in, what they're doing. Right. So IoT makes sense for that. So that's our largest vertical. But also in the you know, healthcare field is a growing vertical for us, whether it's smart devices, whether it's hospital systems, tracking equipment in hospital systems such as IV pumps for patient care and safety, you know, all those types of things. And then finally, what I'll call, it's kind of like a hybrid retail, industrial, just service tracking. Let me just call it that. So
okay.
If you want to have your pet groomed, or you want to have your car serviced, or you want to have a medical appointment, whatever that is, consumers now are used to the Amazon experience, the Uber experience, where you know every step of the way. It's not a black box of your service or your good that you're getting delivered. You know every step of the way. You know, UPS and FedEx has been doing this for a year, you know, track your package, right? That insight makes us feel really good as consumers. That's the experience we now demand. And so any type of service that any business does that has a black box component is not going to be acceptable for any consumer or other business user. They want that exposed. And how do you expose it? You use sensors to unlock the data as it's moving around, to talk about cold chain tracking, vaccine, right, temperature. It's that. But again, it's sensors. It's not people, because it's not affordable to have it people, and you're not going to put people in a, you know, in a refrigerated truck just sitting there, you know, measuring temperature. So there's safety and there's cost consideration. So those are kind of our three main areas, but there's dozens and dozens of other industries where this makes sense. And that's why we're very excited about it. You know, the key thing for us as a business is really focusing on those collection of use cases, which at a high level may seem kind of disparate, but there actually is a core piece of it that our software addresses across the board that is common for all of these different industries and these different types, seemingly different types of use cases. Right. The software side is very, very similar. And we've figured out how to package that up and make and solve all those common problems, but also make it extensible enough that you can customize it for specific workflows or specific industries. That's kind of what we view as our secret sauce with our software. And then, as Kalen said, the ability to take this from a couple devices as a pilot, one store, whatever it might be, a low volume, prove it out, all the way with the exact same software stack, all the way to millions of devices. And you don't have to swap out things. You don't cap out and have to now redo or re-architect everything. Mm-hmm. Just one place. Once you're there, you can go all the way to the end with it.
Fantastic. Kalen?
Yeah. Something Eric said that I want to highlight because it's really important is the use cases that are opening up. I mean, this is a really exciting time in IoT. And so I'd encourage all the entrepreneurs and the entrepreneurs out there to really think about the opportunities around you, especially if you have industry specific experience, because to take an example, you know, if you looked at people could predict something like the iPhone happening, you know, there was companies trying to build the iPhone like 10, 20 years before the iPhone that weren't successful because it wasn't the right timing.
Right.
But the idea of, you know, a smartphone, a device that you can connect to the internet, do calls, email, et cetera, that was pretty known for a while. What's much harder to predict are the second order, the third order effects. So you might be able to predict the smartphone, but could you have predicted Uber or DoorDash? And those are businesses that are uniquely enabled once effectively every person is connected. So when everyone has a smartphone, you can have drivers who are using their smartphone to be coordinated to go pick up riders and have directions so they don't need to memorize how to drive around. And then on the consumer side, you can just open your phone and they can come to you because they know your location because of the phone, right? And so this is an example, just one example of a business enabled by technology wave. What I find so exciting is that that's going to happen with IoT. What happens when you can effectively connect to anything in the world, not just any person? All sorts of business opportunities are going to open up, and that's happening right now. So it's a really exciting time because of all these tailwinds, because it's playing out. Maybe it's taking longer than some expected, but they're, from our perspective, things are accelerating. And there's a lot happening right now that is making it easier and easier. And to Eric's point, you know, that's why we're taking the approach we're taking, which is if you want to build an Uber, you don't want to have to build the smartphone to be able to build the business of Uber. Other companies can do that. And then you can build on top of these platforms. And so they're taking away, abstracting away a lot of the lower level stuff that you would need for any app in the app store so that you can focus on the thing the value you uniquely provide. And that's our approach with our software stack, which is, look, across industries, whether it's healthcare or transportation or logistics or agriculture or whatever sector it's in, there are common things all these IoT systems need to be able to be successful at each of these steps of the IoT journey, all the way from start up until scale with millions of devices. They all need those things. You don't want to have to reinvent the wheel and build those things. You want to focus on the parts that are unique to you. So that's what we take care of, is we make all that way easier while still enabling a very high degree of customization. So you can build an application that's aimed at your use case, provides values to your customers or to your internal business if you're, you know, using this internally, and be really successful while not having to reinvent the wheel or build everything from scratch, and to build on a stable foundation. And so whether you're an organization that's looking to digitally transform yourselves to reduce costs, to increase efficiency, to improve your customer experience, now is an amazing time. And there's a lot of exciting things happening. Or if you're a business that is trying to sell to your customers as an entrepreneur building a startup or as an entrepreneur building a new business line within a larger enterprise, for all of these companies, it's an exciting time. And so as we've said a few times now, we're really bullish on it. I mean, of course we are. This is, you know, we live and breathe this day to day. I dream about IoT in my sleep, but it's exciting. And there's a lot of factors that are coming together to open up entirely new use cases that didn't exist before. And whenever that happens, that's opportunity for entrepreneurs, for entrepreneurs, and for companies that are adopting IoT.
Absolutely. Very well said. I think, obviously, we here on the IoT for All side are very bullish as well. It's a very exciting space. The more and more companies I have the opportunity to speak with, you can kind of see that sentiment kind of growing amongst the community. So definitely something I think our audience should really take note of. And if they're not in the IoT space, start to learn more about IoT, understand how to adopt, how it can benefit their business. Plenty of content and resources out there to do that. I did want to ask as the last question here, For our audience out there who does want to learn more about Leverage, more about what you all are doing, any kind of topics we've discussed here, or just even follow up with questions, and also potentially also the playbook when that eventually comes out, what's the best way that they can do that, reach out, engage, that kind of thing?
Well, we try to keep our website as up to date as possible in between all the other things we're doing. But so we just relaunched our website for the umpteenth time this year. So it's pretty up to date, and we're doing a better job of keeping it live and continually updating it as well. So The toughest part is just remembering how to correctly spell Leverage, which is LEVERREGE. So all E's, leverage.com. If you go there, we'll probably put a link to this playbook and some other places probably in this video so that you can go get the playbook. We hope everyone finds it value. We have additional chapters and other things that we continue to add to it. Callum just did another deep dive on device selection. Again, we're not a hardware company, but we've learned a lot of lessons from receiving hardware data and integrating hardware data. So we have a lot of good insights there that we want to empower good decision making for our customers up front. And then hopefully by becoming informed, they will see that what we've built is actually pretty special and can really help them accelerate the journey and reduce their risk while lowering their cost to do this. Because it can be kind of scary, if you're
sure.
If you're a company, like one of our customers, they're a window and door company. They don't know about connected products at all. They've never done this before. They build beautiful windows and doors, they sell them, and they never talk to their customers for 20 years. Well, now they want to build connected products. That's a very different sort of pivot for them as a company. They didn't have 24/7 support. They didn't have a large IT team. So they have to transform internally before they can even do this. So it's important to us that, when our customers, when we do engage with them, that they're educated and they're buying for the right reasons and they're as oriented as possible for success beyond even the software we provide. We know our software has tremendous value. Our customers have shown that. But beyond that, we want them to be successful as a business themselves and really realize the value of IoT and not be the 3 out of 4 that have in the past failed when they tried to do IoT.
Right.
We think we can get there. If we can get it down to at least 50-50, we feel like we've made a great impact to the world.
Absolutely. Fantastic. Well, both of you, thank you so much for your time. Great conversation. One of the best we've had in a long time, especially being able to talk at a high level and then really get into the details of not just the state of the industry, but also how to be successful and really deploy IoT to benefit everybody. So I really appreciate both of your time and look forward to getting this out to our audience.
Thank you. Thanks, Ryan.
Thanks, Ryan.
Thank you. All right, everyone. Thanks again for joining us this week on the IoT for All podcast. I hope you enjoyed this episode. And if you did, please leave a rating or review and be sure to subscribe to our podcast on whichever platform you're listening to us on. Also, if you have a guest you'd like to see on the show, please drop us a note at ryan@iotforall.com and we'll do everything we can to get them as a future guest. Other than that, thanks again for listening and we'll see you next time.